it's so right. Are you feeling
and it? It's so loud, and it's so right. Till we're all drunk, then it's so fast, then it's all over.
Go home, go sleep, wake up, get sober.
What a great night.
And it's so loud, and it's so right. Till we're all drunk, then it's so fast, then it's all over.
We don't have Greg tonight, do we? He's gone off to some vegetarian conference, is that right?
I can't imagine there are a lot of vegetarians up in Rockhampton.
Well, you know, it's the front line for them. They're deep in the enemy territory there. So I think that's why they've gone, is to show the calico flag. But it doesn't matter because we don't need him and his stinking vegetables. We have friend of the burger, Monster Yuppie, sometimes known as Ian. How are you, buddy?
I am and most honoured to be here tonight in the cheeseburger gothic Spartacast ensemble.
Oh, honoured? Honoured, really?
Well, it's either that or watch Big Brother with my wife.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, that sounds more like it.
So what do you think of the facilities, mate? You got the Bottle of Cristal when you came to the studio when the drug bowls were made freely available.
I did like the bunnies, the way they chopped up the lines. That's nice.
Yeah. Only the best for our guests.
Yeah, I'm a bit upset that you've made me be his foot cushion, though. Like, this is an uncomfortable way to do a podcast.
I did wash my feet.
You've got that squishy back. He's likely to cut himself on me.
So, I stand you quite the drug expert, mate. That's why we rolled out all the hookers and blow tonight, because we knew you were coming. So it's got the primo stuff.
Expert
out.
Is a term used for those who take a professional interest, and that would certainly cover me.
Oh, right. So you're not a hobbyist?
Not an amateur.
I haven't been for a while, actually. I can't remember the last time I got
stoned. There's the problem right there.
Yeah, that's right. Not because I was particularly stoned. It's just been so long, mate. Parenthood, it's just kind of incompatible with having fun, basically.
I've never been much of it. Like, I like to keep my drug use for killing pain. So, like, for the first, 25 years of my life, I was like, oh, no, I'll try to avoid using painkillers, try to avoid using Panadol, so that when I'm, old and decrepit, then I can start taking it and it actually still works.
You had the same approach as my wife, actually. She was exactly the same when she met me. She, I think she'd had a couple of aspirin her whole life. But, we soon changed that, don't you worry.
I had this terrible headache one night after drinking Stollies. You know, those vodka, pre-mixed vodka drinks? I drank a six-pack of them and I just had some sort of massive migraine headache thing go off.
Jesus, mate.
And
that's because someone slipped a roofie in them.
No, I think it's just because he was drinking cheap, shitty vodka.
So, Ian, everything that drugs can do then?
Well, actually, that was why I wanted to get him on, because he sent...
Yeah, I didn't read it.
He sent through that cool bunch of links, which I was reading up on this afternoon. I did the research.
You might as well start a new podcast.
I did the research. I did the research. And one of the quite fascinating articles about all of these fantastic drugs that he sent over was about super dope, like marijuana
when you smoke it, you only want to eat like $160 degustation meals rather than just a pack of Cheerios?
Well, here's the funny thing. I read it and now I've forgotten about it. Do you recall it, Ian?
Basically, with super marijuana, the Colombians and the South Americans have distilled it, for want of a better term, genetically modified marijuana now to be so potent that what would the old Western Darling Downs chuff that we smoked back in the 80s, and you'd probably bang out a few cones and feel mildly happy, would probably kill you if you took it from the new super dope type dose range. And remember, everything in moderation, everything is dose related. So
is that hyperbole, saying that it would kill you? Because everyone always goes on about how marijuana has never killed anyone. Is this stuff that strong?
Look, I can't speak from experience, but if you were to... what I'd suggest is that over a period of time...
Well, I can. You feel like you're dying.
And this is with all drugs. Everything in the right dose is okay. It's when you go outside of the normal dose range. And the problem with super dope is no one knows exactly what the dose range is. So if you pick it up off your dealer in Fortitude Valley on a Friday night and take it home, you don't know if you should have half a gram, 2 grams, 10 grams. there's no dose range. At least with Panadol, you say take two and you'll be fine. So super dope means that the dose that you're normally expecting is probably a little more potent than you're used to. So you're going to overdose, and you can overdose on cannabis. That's probably well documented.
What happens when you overdose on cannabis? I mean, there have been times in my life where I felt like I have, but I just basically lost the power to walk around.
And that's the goal, isn't it?
Lots of...
Yeah, well, that's right. I'm there. It's good.
Look, there is a fatal dose of cannabis. It is theoretically possible to overdose on it, but what you generally find is that the hallucinations will be far greater. The biomechanical mechanisms in the brain, which gee, that's hard to say when you've been smoking too, will be overwhelmed. Even with a low toxicity, the dose of THC, and they do it in certain, with all medications, they do it in terms of milligrams per kilogram. So for male rats, it's 1,270 milligrams per kilogram. Interestingly, it's only half that dose for female rats. There's a genetic difference between males and females as well. I would suggest that it's probably the safest of all drugs to take, and that the amount, the volume you have to actually take to cause that problem is nowhere near possible in most cases. You probably just couldn't afford that much super dope to kill yourself anyway, unless you're a Colombian drug giant. But look, there's people who've been smoking dope for 30, 40 years, 50 years, and they seem okay. You know, they can walk and talk.
They can write airport novels.
Well, they can.
it's been years.
But it's long-term years, effects that we're still sort of coming to terms with. Because there's been lots of different studies, and is it going to cause the onset of Alzheimer's or Parkinson's? Or as a lot of people say, it's a gateway to schizophrenia. We really just don't know. There's good evidence to suggest that it is, but because you can't say, I took four of these and everyone else is taking the same dose, that's what's going to cause you problems.
Mm. Isn't it rather than a gateway, though, isn't it like a precursor for people who are predisposed to schizophrenia? Like if you have a genetic predisposition to schizophrenia, you totally shouldn't be firing up.
Well, and you probably shouldn't be drinking alcohol, and you probably shouldn't even be taking caffeine or nicotine anyway. Where do you draw the line of this is what we don't do? There's a lot to be said for most of the good music that's come out of the last 40 years, I'd suggest, had a bucket bong somewhere in the background. And in fact, Colin Hay, he of Men at Work, I recently heard, said after hearing of Lance Armstrong having to hand back his medals from all his cycling things due to the drugs, that maybe he should hand back his Grammys.
What have the Colombians done? Is it just like, you know, crossbreeding stronger and stronger strains?
I don't think they're not taking it into laboratory and genetically modifying it there. It's kind of like natural selection, where they just go out and find the right drug out of the right THC. It seems to work for everyone. There's people aren't freaking out. They're not eating through every single Tim Tam. So that one seems to work. They breed that up. And because it has a fairly short life cycle as far as growing goes, they can continually manipulate and take the best of this and the best of that, cross-pollinate, and all of a sudden you've got super dope. The same thing's been happening with pharmaceuticals for years. Cocaine is exactly the same. And I've never actually known anyone who's taken cocaine and marijuana at the same time. But probably the bigger example is speed, methamphetamine. Consider that your average bikie can knock out a dose in his back shed a couple of days. Imagine what the real scientists in the laboratories can do.
Hmm. My understanding was the back in the, I don't know, it must have been the 90s. It was coincident with the spread of the graphical web, which was that breeders in jurisdictions like Holland, where it was legal or paralegal or whatever you want to call it, they were able to experiment crossbreed strains and to grow up some really quite wicked strains of weed. And because of the web, you know, you could get on and you could anonymously order them, and it could be, if you were willing to run the risk, they'd mail them to you because there was no skin off their nose if you got busted. But that sort of the creation of effectively anonymous networks and markets accelerated the process by which dope got a lot stronger. And I remember, like, I smoked a lot of leaf and tip when I was younger. And then I didn't, you know, I just sort of grew up and let it go. And I think, you know, the next time I went back to it, this revolution had happened, and it was just way stronger And I was kind of interested in how it happened, and I ended up writing a story about it. And it was, a lot of it was just down to the crossbreeding, but it was all Amsterdam. I was really interested today to read the pieces you sent over, that it was, this super dope has actually come out of Colombia rather than out of Europe.
In fact, there's some great websites that the Americans have done up, because it's obviously marijuana is now legal in some states, including California, where they chemically analyse it. So they can give a rating on a scale of 1 to 10. Is it good for pain relief? Is it good for nausea relief? What's its THC component? And this website, funnily enough, called Bud Genius, I'm not making that up, goes in and chemically rates every single strain. And because they're selling, you can walk into a cannabis shop with a prescription now in Los Angeles, for example, and you can go and say, I want one that gives you of sleep and lots of nausea reduction. And lo and behold, they have a strain for that. It's come a long way since I was in the early years, where you just bought a $20 stick and hoped for the best.
So what about these nootropics? Because I hear about these and it sounds really exciting, and it also sounds just like a scam.
It does, doesn't it? I was reading that article the other day. Like, there's all these like masters of the universe in New York who are popping these things like M&Ms, and they're like fucking proton pills or something. They give them super throbbing brains, or at least they seem to, and or at least these guys think they do. But there hasn't been there's been no longitudinal studies on the effect, of course, because people have only been gobbling them down for a very short period.
No one's actually put them up against placebo. So placebo being sugar tablets, if you tell someone that this tablet is going to make your pain go away or it's going to make you smarter, there's actually a good chance that it will.
It's
priming. It can just be a little bit of compressed sugar. Yeah, it's the brain is actually probably more susceptible to influence just from by saying that this will work, as opposed to it does work.
And you're coughing up like $80 for a bottle of them. Like, it's not your vitamin C tablets.
Never underestimate people's want to be smarter, richer, faster.
And to take their shortcuts to get there.
Yeah, well, you've only got to look at the average AFL player.
There's an average AFL player? I thought they were all freaks.
Average IQ.
That's right, mate. He's chock full
of roids.
And
this is what really, with the whole AFL thing, what really I don't understand is why they just took these peptides, or they take steroids or testosterone. Why don't they also want to get smarter? Because for me, AFL is a game of being smarter as well as stronger. They should be taking pills that make them smarter. They'll be able to outthink their opponents as opposed to outrun or out-tackle.
I suppose that's right, isn't it? Or even if it's not smarter, they still have to make judgments about speed
to defecate
and distance
in
and angles of interception. They have to make those judgments so much quicker.
Obviously he made a bad call there in that instance. Like, what sunscreen to drink? Which 14-year-old girl to harass?
What we should do is actually have them on mandatory smart pills, and don't worry about the the steroids. We'd all be better off for it.
So there's no you don't know of any nootropic doping regimes in
evidence would suggest that there is none. I haven't seen too many Mensa scientists playing full forward for any of the teams here,
or any chess champions peeing into a bottle before a match.
Actually, do people who play chess have to get drug tested?
What for? Caffeine? Ginkgo biloba?
Nootropics, or they could be... I mean, caffeine's the obvious one because it keeps them stimulated for longer, but why not meth? They could play for hours.
Yeah, but the pieces would keep yelling back at them. Don't call me a horsey. I'm not a horsey. I'm a knight.
But do you think how much from the US? The US Army is obviously they were one of the first users of methamphetamines for the soldiers.
Oh, yeah.
Because you can keep going for 7, 8, 9, 10 days on these things without sleep. So if you're invading North Vietnam, for instance, and you load your guys up, they're A, going to keep going, B, highly aggressive, and C, probably not feel if they do actually become injured. They'll probably just play on, so to speak. So there's a great deal of programs that have gone through the military. Of course, the soldiers are always the best guinea pigs because they'll do as they're told. But you know, this is where a lot of these things get started. So can you, you can imagine that if you're a soldier in Vietnam and your company doctor comes to you and says, here, try this, you'll have a much better night for it, of course you're going to take it.
Yeah, I remember one of my favourite books ever, it remains one of my favourite books actually, was Michael Herr's collection of Vietnam essays. He went over there as a magazine stringer, I think, for Esquire and a bunch of men's mags, and he wrote a book called Dispatches. It's one of the best books ever written, let alone, you know, one of the best books ever to come out of a war. And I remember reading it. It's just drug-soaked, and not just because they were all, you know, shooting up and hitting the bong. Like, there were an enormous number of pharmaceutical options that were provided by the army. And actually, he talks about, you know, they give them uppers to send them out and downers to bring them back. And that was also the period that the military was experimenting with a lot of hallucinogens, looking for non-lethal weapons. And that was another one of the drugs I read about in that great link you sent over. It was not just super dope, but super LSD. I think they had this program that they found that they could give them like a really tiny little micro dose, like smaller than you would get in a tab, but you'd be off your nut for 3 days. I'm not sure why they didn't go through with that program.
I don't know if you've ever tripped, but a lot of people get freaked out very quickly. Imagine if you had that for 3 days, just watching spiders come out of your ceiling.
Why would that stop the army from developing it? I mean, that actually seems to make it more attractive for them. Like, you can just imagine, you know, 24 hours before they rolled into Iraq, for instance, they just dropped some of this, like airdropped it if they could aerosolize the thing, or they put it into the water supply, then they just rolled through and the whole country would be insane for 3 days.
That's got to go against some sort of UN, like, line of dialogue in their manual, surely.
Oh, look, it probably does. I guess it's a chemical weapon.
Don't force civilians to trip balls. It's probably in there in bold.
There's a few Australians who woke up on Sunday thinking they were tripping balls.
The CIA did a lot of work on it too, and they just used to dose up people on the subway. I remember I did my honours thesis on the excesses of the intelligence agencies in the 70s, and one of the my favourite programs that I came across, which was reported by the Church Committee, I think, it was a US Senate committee reported about 75, 76, was the CIA wanted to test, you know, whether or not LSD might be useful for breaking down foreign agents, targets and so on. And so they wanted to test it under field conditions. So they just went onto the subway and gave it to people.
As if riding the subway wasn't painful enough.
All of a sudden you're having some very strange days at work.
Just have some really productive days. I think ASIO, I think the Australian Security Intelligence Organisation, is doing the same thing, but just with different types of rum.
Well, that's also the Navy. But even things like sodium pentothal, which has been around, it's a barbiturate, so it's been around for years and years and years. And this is the original truth serum.
Oh, right.
The original truth serum. So if you were a spy and you got caught and you were held up against a wall by chains, one of the evil doctors would come in and give you a needle full of sodium pentothal straight into the vein, and it would actually, it's exactly the same as Valium. It would just make you really relaxed and open to suggestion.
And that's the one that the gangsters, again, in Colombia use. They just blow it in people's faces.
Like that,
is that right?
One of the similar ones where it's that's like scopolamine, I think that one was, which scopolamine is also used as an anti-nausea when you
that's
go on
it,
the boat.
Yeah.
But this one, yeah, they blow the powder into their faces and then they have no idea what happened the next day. So it's kind of like Rohypnol. Someone takes it, they have no control over their body, they're still conscious, and then they have no memory the next day. And if you know what the average anaesthetic that goes into you for an operation, there's a couple of things. One of them is designed to make you forget what happened. One of them is a muscle relaxant, and then the anaesthetic itself. But the drugs that are designed for you to forget what happened is really good, because if you actually remembered what happened to you during that procedure, either before or after, you probably wouldn't ever go back to hospital again.
Yeah. I remember going in for a procedure. I forget what the procedure was, but it was something in Sydney I had done about 15 years or so ago. And I remember sitting down with the anaesthetist before signing the forms to let him do his thing. And he was, you know, doing the thing that the lawyers require him to do. So, well, I need to inform you, you know, there's a 0.005% chance that you may become conscious during the surgery. He looked at me, and I looked at him, and I said, well, that's all right, because I'll be fucked off my night on drugs, won't I, Doc? And he smiled. He went, that's the spirit.
The drug that killed Michael Jackson, propofol, it's very interesting to watch someone being put under an anaesthetic, and they put it into the line, they've got a cannula that goes into your arm, they put up the dose of propofol, and without exception, every man I've ever seen who's had a dose of propofol goes, oh, Doc, you'll need to give me extra, I'm really hard to knock out, and you can see the doctor just give him the tiniest little bit of a squirt, and in 2 seconds, out like a light. And they have no memory of it. That's how fast these things work. They count backwards from 10. They very rarely make 9.
Yeah, I don't recall making 9 when I had that plate put in my arm after I busted it. You know, I recall going in and seeing the anaesthetist, and that's it. They give you a little prick or something on the back of the hand, and they say count backwards. I remember doing 10, and I think I remember saying 9, and the next thing I woke up in the in my room recovering, and it was awesome actually. I had one of those self dosing morphine
push
systems,
that button long and hard,
so you could just there was a 2.5 minute marathon. I didn't ever appreciate
that's the only
that
way. Charlie Sheen's been able to do that show.
But it turned out to be very good.
Yeah. He's a lot funnier when you're completely and utterly stoned. But you imagine if, from a smart drug perspective, imagine if you were able to genuinely forget things that are traumatic things that had happened in your past. So your cat gets run over as a child, you can then have an injection, you forget that bad memory of the cat getting run over.
I'd probably get addicted to that one. Just every weekend, just let's get rid of that one, and that one, and that one.
I had a really shitty day at work, squirt.
But yeah, exactly. People had just been knocking them down like cashews, I reckon.
On their deathbed going, I've had such a great life, but it feels like it only lasted about 6 years.
Yes, well, the other drug of choice at the moment on Wall Street is modafinil. It's been around for a long time, 15 years. 1998, it came out for the treatment of narcolepsy. And what they discovered was it actually made people more alert. So it's one of the original nootropics. And this is kind of the other way to go. It's said that people are more awake and alive and refreshed. So that movie that Bradley Cooper played in Limitless, where all of a sudden he'd supercharged his brain, which was clearly not possible, but it's a good movie premise anyway. But modafinil is the closest to that. So if you want to supercharge your brain, then this is the one that you want to try. It looks great on paper. Would I try it personally? No.
Ah, right. So there are some side effects?
Every drug has a side effect, whether it's Panadol, aspirin or heroin. Every drug has a side effect, and it's usually dose-related.
Hmm. I guess one of the big things is when you take a smart drug and it starts to affect you and you go, oh, I feel smarter. Oh, I realise I shouldn't have taken that.
But see, this is the thing. People take, and with smart drugs, do we give them to the smart people to make them extra smart, or do we give them to the dumb people to bring them up to average?
I want steroids in that case, just to balance out the playing. If we're going to be making like big muscle-bound idiots smarter, then I want to put some muscle on.
I'll say, modafinil is described as being as Viagra for the brain.
That is a fucking awesome marketing line. No, I mean, it is. Like,
Viagra's been around for 15, 20 years itself, and it was a happy accident. Very happy in some cases.
It was heart medication or something, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was being used as a cardiovascular drug in the initial trials, and when they took
all these 55-year-old men would come back and go, doctor, can I get some more of that?
That was exactly what's happening. So they'd go back in, the trial's over, they'd say, right, thank you very much, and they go, if I could just have a couple more, that'd be great.
Happy accidents are the happy accident of pharmacology, though, aren't they? Like, if you look at the history of psychotropic therapies since the 1950s, a lot of them were discovered accidentally and never really understood. like, you know, it ended up being prescribed, you know, massively. The thing that always surprises me about the US when I go over there is just how fucking medicated it is as a nation. I mean, you flick on the TV and it's not every second ad, but certainly in every second ad break, there's an advert for like mood altering drug and, you know, prescription drugs to get you through the day. And I read this really interesting piece, I don't know, it was like the New Yorker or something about a week or so back. And it was saying that a lot of the drug companies are actually shuttering their research and development shops in this area, at least, because they stumbled onto a lot of these drugs by accident and they don't really understand the mechanisms involved, and they're not stumbling onto any more, and they're just not making any headway. So,
well, things like Prozac, which is again 20 years old, was a happy accident, effectively. There's a whole new class of drugs came out as antidepressants, and I think the statistics show that 25% of women in America in their 40s and 50s are taking antidepressants.
Well, I don't know whether the statistics are related or not. It's probably not. It's probably just correlation rather than causation, but I think it's 25% of women in America are sexually assaulted by the time they finish college.
Well, that doesn't surprise me either. It's the drug use in America is probably 3 to 4 times per head higher than here in Australia. So what does that tell you?
We're self-medicating.
Well, we are self-medicating.
Yeah. But also it tells you a lot about, you know, the nature of the industry in the US. What is this, like a $70, $80 billion a year industry in prescription drugs?
Well, the thing with prescription drugs for mood is that it's not making them happier, it's just bringing them up to effectively a normal. And there's a big bandwidth there of what normal is for a lot of people. The next drug that's going to be the next blockbuster and the next big drug for people will be the libido drugs. How do you resolve the flagging libido? Mm. And there's, you know, Viagra will help with the mechanics and hydraulics of things, but if you're just not interested, there's not a lot you can do about it right now. So the next big blockbuster they're looking at for women in particular is the libido drugs. Now, when I was a young lad, a glass of champagne was...
I'll bet there's a lot of blokes doing research.
And it's effectively, they've just worked out that there is no such thing. There is no such thing as a libido enhancer, basically because it is just such a complicated... I'm not saying this for anyone who's not already married or in a relationship, they already know this, but it's such a complicated area that there's no one thing you can put it down to. People break bones because of low calcium. Well, that's great. We give you more calcium. People have headaches because of inflammation. Great, stop the inflammation. How do you fix libido?
Can't you just get some scientists to get some ground-up rhino horn and figure out what's in that? Because that works gangbusters, doesn't it?
No. You could get those scientists to come around and do some fucking things.
Yeah, maybe.
Pay my mortgage.
How do you apply this?
Libido cure for women. How's it applied? Oh, you rub it into their backs. It's a special type of oil. And that works? Oh, yeah, gangbusters.
That's right. Because before you rub it into the backs, you have to clean the entire house. It's part of the therapy.
And also, heading to the shops and buying things like Louis Vuitton or Jimmy Choo also seem to have a great answer.
Oh, now we're wandering down a very sexist set of stereotypes.
No, but let me take a few more steps.
My wife wanted all of
take a few more steps down there. Take this pill. the moment's gone.
Yeah, I cut you off because I knew it was going to cut me.
None of us can afford a divorce lawyer.
Well, it was important. It was important you cut me off because I think it's time to pay the bills.
So, what client are we giving a metaphorical chubby to this week?
Well, we are getting a rise out of Sourced Grocer of New Farm, who I understand.
Jerome Sourced Grocer is a regular dealer of mine. He gives you a taste, you get a hit, and then he jacks the price up on you.
Okay, just to confirm here, because a friend of mine does call her dealer her greengrocer, this is an actual fruit and vegetable shop, yes?
Oh, it is, and he's got the best pork belly.
And cheese. They've got a great cheese room, too. It's over in, it's actually Tenerife, isn't it? It's in the reef.
And they supply everything from coffee to cheese and the aforementioned pork belly. And Sourced Grocer is 2 thumbs up. As you get older, your dealers and your needs change. My new drugs are cheese and gourmet lamb.
I can do cheese, but I eat that cheese, and it breaks all the laws of like physics and thermodynamics. I eat a kilo of cheese. I
That's
put on 3 kilos of fat.
Because it's blocked up another 2 kilos of something else.
I got to be very careful with the old cheese. So they're good sourced. They went into some old warehouse space, surprisingly enough, in some old warehouse. I know a friend of the burger, Professor Boylan, is a big fan of sourced. He came all the way out from California and wanted to take the concept back there with him. And that surprised me. I thought that the West Coast would have been full of places like that, but apparently not. And one of the things that makes it real special is they have this 100-mile... philosophy. They're not obsessive about it, you know, they're not tiresome fucking hippies about it, but they try and source as much of their stuff as they can from within, you know, 100, 200 miles so that they're not burning shitloads of fossil fuel to get your bright red organic tomato to you. But it also means that the food gets to you a lot fresher. Like, it's not unusual if you went to one of the big two supermarkets, you buy an apple there, you've got no guarantee at all. In fact, I can almost guarantee the opposite. There's a very good chance that apple's been sitting in not just cold store, but it's been
nitrogen.
Sitting in a sort of gas. I forget which gas it is.
They keep them in nitrogen and they don't age. And
really?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. They'll keep them in there for fucking 6 months. You could be eating an apple from last year. You know, they go, oh, God, sorts of fresh food people. It's such bullshit. Anyway, the thing I like about sourced is that, you know, the fruit will go rotten if you don't eat it. Buy your fruit there, eat it quickly because it's got none of that rubbish in it. It's grown with cow poo brought to you as quickly as possible. And I got a good cafe too.
Actually. As an inner city resident, I actually don't have a garden, so I treat sourced as my basil and herb suppliers. They've got the whole lot there. That's why I like
it. Lovely.
That was a fucking... That was an awesome segue.
Beautifully, he was spinning it like a silkworm's web, and then you just sort of tramp straight through it, getting it all over your face.
That was the segue equivalent of Shane Warne's first ball in Test cricket, I reckon. Just floated out there and then jagged off exactly where he wanted to go, 90 degrees in the other direction into gardens. Because
I've been living in a flat for 4 or 5 years. But I've recently bought a house, and it came with a garden. And we were out looking at places, and I was like, "Oh god, an apartment would be nice." And my wife's like, "Oh no, I'd really like a yard." And I'm like, "All right, but you're doing the gardening. Guess how often my wife has done the mowing? Zero times. Guess how many weeds she's fished out of the garden."
About the same.
Zero.
I can't believe you're the guy who was trying to talk me out of my sexist joke about libido drugs before, and you're walking down this dangerous path.
Pure truth bombs being dropped here. And the thing is, when we moved in, the people who sold us the house, they'd put in a nice lawn out the front. And the problem with a nice lawn is that you've kind of got to keep on top of it, or it stops being a nice lawn, and suddenly you realise your terrible mistake. So there's this horrible guilt. If it was just a weedy, rocky bag of shit, I wouldn't worry about it. But now I kind of forgot about it for a couple of weeks, and suddenly, you know what happened at the beginning of the week? Spring. My front footpath looks like it has syphilis.
Yeah.
Are you getting looks? Yeah. Are you getting looks from your neighbours?
Well, it does.
Oh, are they judging you?
I haven't seen them, but I know they are.
They're looking out their window, going, "That new fella, he doesn't know what he's doing."
Yeah, and the thing is, all the neighbours are octogenarians. All they have in their life is to go out every day and find weeds. Like, it's a joy to them to find the half a dozen weeds that have sprung up overnight.
So it would be community service if you let them come over and do your lawn.
Oh, yeah, that'd be nice, except that's not how they work. They only garden their own lawns so that they can delve spite on everyone else.
Yeah, no, exactly. Selfish old bastards. They're terrible. This suburb's full of them where I am. Selfish old pricks. None of them will come around and do my garden for me.
Oh, that'd be nice.
I got to hire people.
There's no kids around here. I need to find some, 13-year-old kids who can happily spend 5 hours in my garden, doing a shitty job, and giving them $10.
So that's how long you spend in a sesh, is it 5 hours? I don't reckon I've done 5 hours of gardening.
I spent 5 hours on the phone getting a concreter to come in. Problem solved. I even had the artificial grass for a while.
All right.
You never have to mow artificial grass. Yeah, you can roll around on it. You can suntan on it. The dogs can lie out in it. It's perfect.
I might have to look into that.
And no one need know the difference. The new artificial grasses are out there. Even close up, look like real grass. Dan, you'll never have to mow again. Albeit your capital expenditure at the start of the program is quite high, your ongoing operating expenditure is very low.
I had an artificial tree once, but I didn't realise. I was living in an apartment at Bondi. It was a great apartment, actually. It was this old former hotel. And it was right on the beach, you know, booming views of the waves. It was awesome. And I went down one day. This place was full of, like, you know, couples like us, youngsters. And so they were constantly coming, constantly going. And, you know, there was a lot of blokes like me who were, you know, their spirits were being broken for the first time in their lives. So, you know, they were having to get rid of their favourite brown armchair that they'd had all the way through college, for instance. You know, it stank and the foam was coming out. But, you know, that was fake. But anyway, no, not anymore. Girlfriend says it's gone. So you constantly find unhappy-looking men carrying these things down. But one day I saw a guy, very unhappy-looking guy, taken down this magnificent-looking pot plant. I get a checkered history with pot plants. Like, once or twice I've tried to grow them. Once or twice I've killed them. And I saw this guy's plant. I thought, fuck, look at that plant. Like, if I wanted to start like that, that was like, you know, the Schwarzenegger of plants, I probably wouldn't kill it for at least a week. So I grabbed this. And I took it upstairs and I watered it. It didn't die. I just, fuck, this plant's brilliant. And so I'm watering it. And I did this for like 3 or 4 months or something. I know, anyway, I just, you know. Jane never said anything. Just let me water this fucking thing. It was 3 months
in. I'm thinking of calling child services just to check on your kids.
It's okay. They just came home. They're actually dolls.
I was bragging about my green thumb. I was, you know, look at that fucking plant. The thing, you know, that's alive. 3 months I kept that plant alive. What do you reckon about that? She was plastic.
When did the penny drop when your wife actually went to it and said, honey?
When she told me. No, she knew as soon as I brought it in. I don't know why she let me water it for months. I guess she was just waiting for that opportunity.
Doofus is watering the plant again.
So, yeah, gardens, mate, no. Not for me. I don't like them. I don't like the people you find in body weight
in biomass the other day. Like, you know what a dandelion is? It's like this sort of mat of green plasticky stuff with a big yellow flower out the top. And then you've got to jam a big... I bought a tool that jams it under it and sort of you pluck it out. It is actually quite cathartic. You feel like you're sort of fishing for jellyfish in the lawn. You sort of pull it slowly out of the thing and put it in a bucket. But
yeah, see, I'm like Ian. I get my catharsis from calling some guy up and paying him when he does the work for me.
Hard work, getting your feet in the earth. But the problem is, some of these fucking weeds are brilliant representations of evolution at work. There are cobbler's pegs that stick to everything. But there's this thing I found the other day. It looks like a little tiny tree with like little white triangles all over it. And I'm like, oh, well, that should be easy to get. You grab it and it plucks out of the earth really well. But as soon as you touch it, every single one of those little white flowers is actually this organic mousetrap that flicks fucking barbed seeds into your face and they scatter across the lawn.
What the fuck kind of Amazon jungle have you got? I got a few bindies and some bird patches.
Cartoons with the 6-foot-high talking plant that eats adventures as it goes past. I've got some of them in the backyard.
Triffids? You're growing triffids?
Pretty much, yes.
I don't know what's in our backyard. We still got some banana trees. That big storm came through a year or so back. They got rid of quite a few of them. One of them ended up in my pool, actually. Had to pay a bloke a pretty penny to get rid of that, let me tell you.
Dan, I'm a problem solver by nature. And what I can see here, we can touch on an earlier topic. Had you thought about just growing some cannabis in your backyard?
Are there any downsides to that?
I had a flatmate tried that once. Yeah, no, I had a flatmate who... did that once, or tried to do it anyway, but it didn't work out. The plants never got mature enough for him to harvest. He just kept smoking them when they were too small.
That's like trying to grow grapes for wine, but you just pick the grapes off and eat them.
I had a garden in Bondi when we lived down there. We had a beautiful apartment in Bondi, and it had a backyard. And we grew some tomatoes. Because tomatoes, you know, they grow everywhere. And anybody who, you know, Jane's a composter. And compost just seems to be a delivery system for fucking tomato seeds to spread them all over the backyard. So we had tomatoes growing out there. We had some basil, as I used to call it. You can get a meal out of that, like a little tomato and basil sauce, which was all right. I've always liked the idea of getting, you know, food out of the garden. And I think we've got like a kaffir lime tree in the backyard that occasionally gets used in, you know, Thai curries and stuff like that. But, you know, to get food out of the garden, you've got to go down into the garden.
Just send the boy down there.
Yeah. It's easier just to pay a bloke to do it. And then it's easier still to pay a bloke to just bring your chicken and vegetable stir fry around.
Dan, what are you trying to achieve with your garden? What is it you want?
From my garden?
Yes.
Yeah, couldn't you subdivide it? Like sell it off? There must surely be a mobile phone company that would pay you to put a tower out there.
My biggest concern is when we moved in, there are two mango trees and they haven't fruited yet, but they're just starting to flower. And I'm like, I wonder how much my lovely wife will be cleaning up mangoes.
Does she know not to eat them green, though?
She will after the first one.
it's not Dan's good lady wife.
Yeah, well, there's a bat colony of like 200 million bats about 400 metres away, and they are going to be very interested in my backyard in a month or so, I think.
Under the current political regime, you can...
What I'm hoping is that Ian is going to say, under the current political regime, you can fire shotguns in built-up urban areas as long as they're aimed at wildlife.
That's where I was headed, because I believe that Clive Palmer will be enforcing the mandatory killer flying fox day.
I so wish I'd voted for him. Well, actually, he's very close to getting in. They haven't declared the CEO. I sort of wonder whether or not he'll be bothered going. I mean, it's not like he needs the money. And it's quite a bit of work being a backbencher. Like, quite a bit. I mean, he'll have to hire a bloke to do it for him.
See, Dan, what you're getting here is, and I think you're getting the gist of things, that outsourcing is the new way to go. You need to outsource your garden. Clive's going to outsource his parliamentary career. I outsource my concreting. Outsource it.
I see. So I need to find some sucker to help me, well, to go and net my mango trees for me. John, what are you doing on the weekend?
You know, Greg likes plants. No, not me. Greg likes plants.
He likes
them so much he puts them in his body. You could totally tell him there's like, you know, a vegetable or something.
Yeah, I need to figure
backyard,
out a way to
infuse
his scientific bent.
Tell him you're doing research on flying foxes.
Yeah, that's what it is.
So, Greg, I understand he's a bit of a scientist, but is he a good cook?
No, God, no.
Okay.
No, Greg, isn't he? Greg doesn't cook. Greg finds ingredients and he eats them.
Okay, so you couldn't just pay him off in mangoes in months to come.
Well, it sounds like he could. It sounds like he's actually exactly the kind of bloke you need out there. He'll just sit under the mango tree eating them.
Well, I would suggest, and you could actually use it as an income stream. Get the mangoes, turn them into mango jam or whatever, sell it, pay for someone to come in, concrete your yard.
Yeah. I think the sooner you get rid of those mango trees and replace them with a couple of decent cell phone towers.
And every man loves a chainsaw.
No, I don't.
What do you want, a friggin' hacksaw, do you, John?
No, I want some bloke to come around and, you know,
honestly,
do the job.
You're the sort of man who goes elephant hunting and
gets
someone else to hold the gun. Point it over there, boy. Point it at the big grey thing.
The guys who come in with the chainsaws are invariably missing at least one, if not two or three fingers. That alone should be a warning sign not to do it yourself.
I could go with three fingers right now. Three fingers of scotch.
I'm up for that.
Yeah.
What? I got the drinks last week. Just before that. It must be Ian's turn.
I've been invited down to the local whiskery bar, which is Nant, just down the road here in New Farm. I've actually been invited down with a young lib, so I'll buy the first round, get him started on the good stuff, and then make him buy the really expensive gear once he's had a few.
That sounds like a plan.
That's a plan. Hey, you've been listening to episode 14 of Spartacast, Drugs in the Garden, with special guest Spartan this week, Dr. Monster Yuppie, tired old regular Dan Beeston from the Smart Enough to Know Better podcast, and me, JB, because I'm always hanging around here.
and the dulcet tones of the gravy boink project. Suffer MC came to take you home. I dread lyrics like spits.